T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Hall. Up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
We go heavy.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
We got Tommy Lee Lewis in the backfield as they take the shotgun snap. Brees is going to throw right side. It is Lewis, and he's decked as the ball arrives. No penalty marker.
Which bothered you more, the missed pass interference call that prevented the Saints from winning, or the NFL overtime rules that kept the ball away from the Chiefs offense?
I think that when you have the player who committed the penalty and acknowledging it afterward.
I thought it was for a split second, but, you know, Darrell got up. You know, when I got up, he said incomplete. So, you know, I just was like, thank you.
Roby Coleman was pretty honest and blunt, let's say, in admitting the fact that he did commit pass interference. That was the most egregious one. I don't like the overtime rule either, so I think that needs to be changed. So I'd say it's 1 and 1A.
Mully and Hall.
I think they're kind of kindred spirits in a sense.
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
Burkhead is in for the touchdown, and with an overtime touchdown run by Rex Burkhead, the dynasty continues for the New England Patriots. They're going to their third straight Super Bowl.
The hero is Tom Brady. The hero could have been Patrick Mahomes, as you say, whoever had the ball last. But Brady was absolutely unbelievable. Did you read that story? Supposedly he walked into the locker room or some room where the team was before the game and described himself as,
I am the baddest mother on the planet.
I mean, that's a pretty bold statement to make to your teammates, and guess what? He's probably right.
He backed it up.
Everyone thinks we suck and, you know, can't win any games.
Mully and Hall.
It's a hell of a team.
On 670 The Score.
Tommy. Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We have our Super Bowl. It's the Rams taking on the Patriots after double overtime games. Just one overtime in each game, therefore double overtime. That's not right. The Patriots, a one-point favorite, according to the odds makers, set the total at 58.
Thought nobody believed in them.
Apparently Vegas does now. 38 fourth-quarter points in the AFC title game. That was extraordinary to watch. And, you know, let's talk about this for a second, David, and we'll get to the calls. I know a lot of people want to check in. But I'm curious, when you think about what could have been, the Saints had to settle for field goals early in that game.
Yeah.
If they had jumped out and gotten some touchdowns there, that game would have been over fairly early.
They didn't, though.
They did not. The Patriots could have been up 21-0 at halftime. Tom Brady threw a Jay Cutler interception, is the way we like to say it. From like 2 yards out, he threw a pick in the end zone that, again, you could have seen them score a touchdown there. You could have been up 21-0 at the half, and that game effectively would have been over. It would have been too big a deficit. So, you know, it's amazing how things happen in games early on that really affect the outcome. And again, whenever you're settling for field goals instead of touchdowns, they were what?
You're going to pay for it eventually.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think, though, that is interesting to note. Another thing's interesting to note is that it's impossible, and we'll get to the phone calls, but it's impossible to watch that game and to feel, as somebody who's watched every Bears game and people in Chicago who are Bears fans, and not feel like, oh man, this could have been the year.
Sure.
This could have been the year. Yeah. So the Super Bowl is between a team that you dominated and a team that you competed with very well in the Patriots. The Bears dominated the Rams.
Bears should have won the Patriots game, and except for some special teams issues.
They were in that game.
Yes, they were.
And remember, that was a Kevin White Hail Mary game.
Right.
And they came within a yard of sending that game into overtime. The point of this is, if you're looking for takeaways, you're encouraged if you're a Bears fan, but you're also reminded just how bitter the disappointment is, because, yes, you have a team that is good enough to call itself a Super Bowl contender, but you need a kicker who's reliable that you can count on, because that's what both these teams have, is that you get this far, you need a kicker to carry you this far.
Let me ask you, and I don't argue that at all, David, but I felt that the greatest problem that the Rams had, especially early in the game, was the crowd noise. That was a very difficult place to play. That crowd was going crazy. You could hear it on your television. And they had to jack up the sound in his helmet. They had to close the ear holes. They taped up the ear holes. He was standing there the way they operate. He's trying to hear the play so he can give the play to the team in the huddle. And then they want the coordinator, who is the head coach, Sean McVay, in his head, right up to, they want to snap the ball with 15 seconds left because they want McVay to be able to tell him what he's seeing. He couldn't hear anything.
And I can't hear a word you're saying.
You could see him getting a different speaker in his helmet on the sideline, almost a louder speaker. You could see McVay at one point, they could read lips and say, you know, I can't hear you, or you can't hear what's happening.
I tell you, I'm having trouble hearing you.
And you saw the left tackle and then left guard, the offensive line, talking to each other before the snap, which is something you don't typically see.
No.
See, though, I think the Rams did start like a team that looked rattled by the environment.
They weren't
ready for the moment.
By the end of it, the guy seemed settled in, even with all that noise.
And I think they did, and I go back to it's almost as if after the fake punt, this was a team that sort of found its rhythm. It was like they exhaled and like, okay, well, we're going to go back to being the risk-taking team that we are, even though Sean McVay did not take the risk that everyone thought he would take on fourth and goal, and he kicked the field goal back when he could tie the game instead of going for the win.
But I think the other element, David, is that they will not face that problem in the Super Bowl. They'll be in a dome, so they'll be fast on the turf, but they will not face the issue of noise because it's such a corporate event. There won't be tons of Patriot fans there screaming at them.
Super Bowl crowds are rarely partisan crowds.
Right.
Right. They're into it.
It's just a bunch of people who want to go to the Super Bowl.
It's a tourist attraction.
Really care. Yeah.
It's not something that there'll be plenty of Rams fans. There'll be plenty of Patriots fans, but I think they will cancel each other out. And your point is that Jared Goff won't face a moment any more frenetic than the one he faced yesterday at the Superdome.
And he'll have the coach in his
head. That's an interesting point.
Jared Goff's passer rating dips by 30 points when he's on the road. Part of that is the noise of the crowd and him not able to hear what Sean McVay is telling him. Tom Brady is changing plays and making calls at the line of scrimmage. That is not the case with a young quarterback like Jared Goff. Maybe someday it will be, but right now he is led by his coach.
Jared Goff also took a step yesterday. You can't deny that.
I'm not denying it.
I agree with you. That's a big moment for him to conquer, and now he's going to be better for that in the Super Bowl.
All right, let's get back to the phone lines. We've got Mike has waited patiently on the south side. Hey, Mike.
Morning, Mike.
Oh, I guess he didn't wait that patiently. Oh, is he there? Mike, are you there?
Good morning.
Oh, okay.
Morning.
Buddy.
Yeah, look, I'm listening at you guys, and I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but in the second quarter, there was also a missed pass interference, too. I can't tell you who it was, but a Ram wrapped up a Saint, and that wasn't called.
Yeah, but Mike, that fair point, but the score wasn't tied and there wasn't less than 2 minutes to go in the most important game of the season with the winner goes to the Super Bowl. That's the difference.
The point he's making, though, is one you got to take into account before you change rules.
I don't know that I do. I mean,
think you have to.
Okay.
You can't differentiate. I understand because it's later in the game. The play appears to be more important, but you don't know where the game is lost.
It doesn't appear to be more important. It is more important.
Jeff is in Fox Lake. Good morning, Jeff.
Morning, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, Mike. A lot of anti-officiating calls coming in today all over the whole entire world.
It was a bad call.
It was.
It was a mess.
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
That guy, that line judge, he's out there on the field with seven officials and 22 players on a given play, right?
Yep.
So all 29 of them are out there doing the best they can,
mm-hmm.
especially in a big TV game. So that guy missing that call is no different than Parkey missing his field goal or...
How do you feel about that, Jeff?
So should they have the official on the Today Show?
Now, here's the thing. That happens in a game. The problem with the NFL, I've been embarrassed. I was in training wheels and watching Bob Avellini and Vince Evans. I mean, I'm 40 years into this.
That'll make you wreck.
Love the NFL. Was playing fantasy football during Prodigy, like 1994, before the internet was even a thing. And I've been watching this. So anyway, I went back and watched the whole first half of this New England-Kansas City game. Watched the center. I played center, so I watched the offensive line. The New England center, Andrews, number 60, on every single snap, he held. I watched every play, went back and watched it again. Same with Kansas City center, number 61. The problem is the NFL is dirty. There's so much cheating that goes on in the NFL, it's worse than rollerball or highlight or any sport you can think of that's dirty. I'm serious.
Thanks,
kids,
Jeff.
Kids are brought up in peewee league, in high school, in junior high, and they're, you know, you're taught offensive line, you block with your elbows and your body. You're not allowed to grab people. If the NFL wants to fix the problem, they have to
problem, and thanks, Jeff, for the call. The problem is, how do you legislate that? How do you tell guys no gamesmanship? It's not cheating. It's gamesmanship.
And you could call holding on every play. You could call traveling in the NBA in every possession.
Yes, you could.
A lot of the ways the game has changed because of different reasons, and you can't call something every play. But you know what? Again, this goes down. This was an isolated moment at the end of a game that determined who goes to the Super Bowl. You got to be better than this.
We'll be bringing in a very famous center in a little bit, Jeff, if you want to stay tuned.
Nice segue.
We'll ask him about it at 7:40. But next, we're going to shift gears. We're going to talk to our guy, Bruce Levine. We'll talk about the Cubs fan convention, and we'll ask Bruce how to read the tea leaves here on this Jock Peterson report, the White Sox apparently talking trade with the Dodgers. What does that mean in terms of building the roster and Manny Machado and all the rest of it? It's Mully and Haw on the score.
Who wants to play in St. Louis?
Bruce Levine, 670, the score baseball analyst.
It is all baseball.
32 years, baseball veteran reporter.
Bruce, I've known you for a number of years now.
Breaking stories faster than a herd of speeding turtles.
I like turtles. All right, you're great zombie.
Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine.
By the way, I love you in The Wizard of Oz.
Bruce Levine.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 the score. Bruce Levine is the score's baseball man. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, guys. Yeah, recovering from a long Cub convention, a lot of decimating of the information that was thrown our way from the time that Tom Ricketts came on with you guys last Thursday until yesterday, and Jason McLeod, the head of the minor leagues, talking about restoring and refurbishing and actually developing a starting pitcher for the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, there was a lot that came out of that. There was a lot of fun stuff, and there were a couple of really interesting points, and I agree with what David said earlier, that Theo was absolutely, he was just so truthful and honest, and you felt like he was kind of pointing the thumb, and you know, it was a very interesting idea coming from him.
And it almost seemed like, Bruce, this was by design. This is what the Cubs wanted, Theo's message to be the loudest one to come out of the convention.
Well, you know, it's one of honesty. It's not a revelation, though, that they have to supply the getting better part of it within what they have. That was the initial message we heard on the 71-minute speech that he gave on October the 3rd after they were eliminated from 2 days in a row of losing the division and then losing the wild card. And that has been, unfortunately, in some ways a constant because of the fact that they don't have any money to spend. And when we say they don't have money, they've already spent a lot of money. They're a high-revenue team that is going to have a payroll in the first three or four. But the reality is that they, and this is what I got most out of the weekend, the reality is that they cannot project long-term revenues right now. What does that mean? Well, the long-term revenue that they were counting on the most over the last 6 or 7 years is the money that they were going to get from their new Chicago Cub television network starting in February of 2020. So to be able to add a Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, long-term contracts within, you have to be able to project what those revenues are going to be coming in. Initially, they thought it was going to be $1 million a broadcast for all their broadcasts on their own network. Now, they're faced with the reality of the changing cable business. People buy their media elsewhere. Streaming is king, and they cannot project how many cable carriers are going to be able to take and supply Chicago Cub baseball in the Chicagoland area, and therefore they cannot project those revenues for the baseball department.
Bruce, I guess I was struck more by what he said about Addison Russell's situation and the fact that Theo acknowledged the fact he talked to Addison's ex-wife, Melissa Reedy, and she gave him and the Cubs her approval to bring Russell back for a, quote, conditional second chance. And I thought that the way that he spoke about talking and consulting with domestic violence experts who talked about the, you know, not necessarily being on a zero tolerance policy and feeling that responsibility that he's spoken about before, because this is a guy they developed and this happened on the Cubs watch. And I felt like that was new ground that he covered that I hadn't heard before. Did that stand out to you as well?
It did. I mean, it gave more clarity and I think gave more support for the Cubs to be able to continue to pursue the reestablishing of Addison Russell and allowing him to complete his rehabilitation without the public image being destroyed. I think that's, you know, that's so important to a public, you know, even though it's a privately owned business, you know, sports and baseball is a publicly driven business. And with that in mind, you know, you have to make your fans happy. You have to give them honest answers. You have to be clear with them. And it wasn't really clear until this weekend that indeed Russell had the support of everybody involved and that he should be able to continue to move on. You know, that disturbing story that came out about a month ago, which occurred actually 2 years ago, about how, you know, he was involved with Melissa and her being, you know, taken down by him, that kind of sent the story, you know, back into this is something we shouldn't do for the fan base, for people out there that certainly are worried about, you know, the social issue involved. But nonetheless, you know, I think that added some clarity there. And I think, David, you point out, you know, something that was really relevant here about this rehabilitation. Now, we don't even ever get around to the fact that Addison Russell had two really bad seasons in a row. A lot of people may allude to the fact that his off-the-field problems impacted that. A guy who was an all-star shortstop in 2016 and was one of the main contributors to the World Series championship. But that's another issue that has to be dealt with.
There's a report out there that the Cubs are looking to move Ben Zobrist, and that would be supposedly budget-related. The idea would be you clear $12.5 million, and maybe you go out and get a reliever with that money. You know how much they love Zobrist, and he certainly delivered on that contract. Is that a possibility? And
To me, it doesn't make sense, you know, honestly, because I know they want that $12 million back to add flexibility, but what you're taking away is a dynamic player who is penciled in at second base along with Descalso. Neither are going to play 150 games, okay? One is a really good utility guy that can play 110 games in Descalso. Zobrist had as good a year as he could possibly have last year. It was a great comeback year. He's a winner. He is the guy, when a hitting coach is not getting the message across, that a hitter on the Chicago Cubs can look at and say, wow, look at Ben Zobrist's plan. He has a plan when he goes up there for the first two pitches. He has a plan for the next two pitches. He has a plan of whether he's going to try to take a walk, lay down a bunt, hit the ball to the other side. He's a complete baseball player. He's not the best baseball player you've ever seen, but he does, he gets the very most out of everything he has, and you would miss more with the intangibles of Ben Zobrist not being there than you would giving away just for money issues. That's just my call. I think he's an integral part of what winning's all about for the Chicago Cubs. I know it's a one-year commitment left, 38 years old, but that's the example. That's the type of player you want on your team if you want to win.
Bruce, I thought Chris Bryant was having fun with Ryan Dempster during that skit when he made the reference to St. Louis and called it a boring city. I I don't think that that was a wise thing for him to say. I don't think that you don't get anywhere by insulting your rival city.
It is boring, isn't it?
Well, no. I mean, I like St. Louis, but I was surprised he insulted St. Louis coming from Bryant. I was just as surprised maybe that Yadi Molina overreacted to that.
Yeah.
Chris Bryant's not an instigator, but at the same time, I see both sides. I just think it was probably bad decision on both guys' parts. Where did this go from here to just add to the rivalry?
Well, you know, it just shows you can't say anything, you know, even when you're having fun anymore, if you're a public figure, you just can't. But in reality, is it going to add one more win for the Cardinals? Is it going to make them play any harder than professionally they already do? I don't know. I mean, it's similar to what occurred last year, you know, with the Hamels comment, how the Brewers and Cubs were not rivalry yet, and that kind of came back to haunt them at the end of the year. This comment, I mean, Chris is an honest guy. He likes to have fun. I just don't see it impacting the rivalry. Do you, after 135 years, do you think it's going to change the outcome of one ball game?
Well, I think that you could really expand that comment. I mean, name a city in the NFC Central that isn't boring.
Yeah, that's right.
Chicago. I mean,
well, we live in Chicago is the only one. Because,
comparatively boring. The rest of them. No offense to anyone. I've been to Pittsburgh and had fun.
They are there.
Boring.
They're a combination.
Been to St. Louis
small,
and had a good time. Fun.
They're small city.
Cincinnati.
You know?
Been there and not had fun. Boring. Where else? What am I missing?
Milwaukee
not bad. Is okay, but not Chicago. Let's be honest.
Hey, you go to Summerfest. Everybody does. You have to go. But in reality, I think, you know, the weekend for me, guys, was all about, what you brought up with Russell. The revenue streams not being there for Theo to be able to project for the future. When he was on with on our station 2 weeks ago, he said that for the first 2 years, revenue from the TV network will more than likely not go to baseball operations. So that means that there's startup fees. That means there's the idea of developing, you know, your TV network into what you want it to be. And there's no way to project it. And I think that had more impact about being able to go after Bryce Harper or Manny Machado this year than anything else.
I still think they're lying in the weeds for Machado. All right, buddy.
Well, thanks,
that's just
Bruce.
My fear.
We'll see. Take care, guys.
That is Bruce Levine. That's my fear. I don't know if I've told you, Michael.
No, you have not.
Yeah, I just think it just seems like the Sox are doing all this work, and then eventually Machado will come to the Cubs. He'll live in a subdivision with his friends who are on the Sox, and
they'll get it best of both worlds.
Yeah,
right?
He'll have his old his cousin slash brother in Elmore Jr.
I still think that, you know, like it or not, if you're in the Machado camp, that don't you almost have to wait for Harper to sign to kind of set the market and see which team ends up with him, and then therefore, especially if it's not Philly, then Philly, I'm sure, then ups the ante to go after Machado. I mean,
right.
He's going to sit there, and it's.
I don't know, Mike.
Sox,
if Machado
right?
comes to you on Monday morning, gives you a phone call, and you say, "Kenny, I'm ready to sign." I say, "Here's the pen."
Absolutely. Oh yeah, no, I agree with you. I just think that if
yeah.
they're playing,
it's
it smart,
in his best interest
wait, right?
to wait. That's yeah. I wouldn't argue
likely.
With that.
Yeah.
Mully and Haw on the score. It is like a Christmas morning every time we talk to them. We just run downstairs, tripping over each other, trying to tear open the gift that is Olin Krutz. Good morning, Olin. How are you?
Morning, Olin.
Good morning, guys. I'm really good after an exciting championship Sunday. Glad I don't have to deal with a Bears loss according to the referees' calls like that. So I'm sure in New Orleans and in Kansas City, they're not happy about a lot of things, but the pure entertainment value that the NFL is unbelievable.
God, it was a great weekend of football and
it
a
really
great
was.
Sunday. I mean, it was just amazing, and I think there's many takeaways, and we've talked this morning about the idea that, you know, you ought to allow both teams to touch the ball in playoff overtime, which might be, I don't know, nitpicking, but it is a takeaway. And, of course, that terrible call. I don't know what you do about that, but that was awful.
That's a really bad call. So some things I'm sure you can deal with some of the calls in the New England game, and they've called it that way all year with, you know, Chris Jones hitting Tom Brady in the chest but not in the head, but where the ref was standing, he couldn't really see it. Dee Ford being offsides, which a lot of defensive linemen are, and then you call it that point in the game, but you can see it there on film. Now, them missing a call in that New Orleans and Rams game, even though you take a look at everything, you could talk about a lot of things. You talk about Drew Brees missing Michael Thomas there on first down when he's wide open and not completing that pass. But, man, I mean, that call is just obvious. It's helmet-to-helmet contact, and it's pass interference. I just sat there with my mouth open staring at my two sons, and they both looked at me the same way, like, how the hell do you not make that call at that moment, that game? And then, you know, that's just the NFL. Like I talked about, the pure entertainment value. I mean, the perfect guy does it. He plays the villain. He plays the villain very well after the game and says his PI and he doesn't care and listens to the refs. And it's an unbelievable what the NFL has going on their championship Sunday there. And everybody's just interested. And get people like me who are not even tied to the game are screaming at the TV and feel just completely worn out after you watch the game.
Olin, looking at the Patriots-Chiefs game and keeping to the football perspective, you look at the Chiefs scored 24 points in the fourth quarter, but until that point, I thought it was, you know, really somewhat remarkable that the Patriots were able to contain the Chiefs as much as they were able to. And I think the best defense sometimes goes back to a ball control offense, and the fact that the Patriots possessed the ball as long as they did kept Patrick Mahomes on the sidelines where he remained during overtime. But that's a different story. How did the Patriots control the ball to the extent that they did to neutralize the Chiefs' offense?
Yeah, and end up with 500 yards of offense, right? And it's really just McDaniel. Look, they come out the first play of the game, and they're in, you know, what we'd call like a short yardage formation or two wide formation. Two wide is two tight ends and a fullback. And really, I can't even tell when's the last time I saw that to open a game. And all of a sudden, I'm wondering, okay, what are they going to do out of this? And they run ISO. And I'm all the way back in 1998 with Tony Wise and Dave Wansett and Matt Cavanaugh. We're running ISO on a two tight end formation right downhill at the Chiefs. And, you know, I'm thinking Chris Jones is going to dominate this interior three of the Patriots, but he doesn't. And then they pass set him and he rushes upfield like they think he's going to. And they run ISO right downhill at the Kansas City Chiefs and just start to play that kind of style of football, right? Just run the ball, play action to Gronk after that. And you could just see it's just they got them off balance now and they got to play everything. And, you know, it's just Josh McDaniels and Tom Brady's going to get you in a perfect play. And then Tom Brady's going to execute it and just take whatever's there and go to the matchup that you give him and control the ball and get 500 yards of offense and keep that, like you said, keep that vaunted Kansas City offense off the field. And then the Patriots defense is going to play man coverage and more aggressive in the playoffs because the ref's going to let you go a little bit more. And next thing you know, it's 14-0 at the end of half after a double move, after Brady finds the double move in the end zone. And you can't, you know, you're sitting there shocked at halftime on your couch because that's like the last thing you expected to happen to the Chiefs at home.
You know, Olin, they say that you're not old as long as there's a Super Bowl quarterback your age still playing.
Hey, listen, if they put all those rules around the center, I might be still snapping the ball, too.
What do you make of that, though? And I mean, obviously, Breeze loses and doesn't get there, and now it's this unbelievable kind of matchup between the – you know, we've seen this Super Bowl many years ago, Tom's first victory against the then St. Louis Rams, and now here are the L.A. Rams, and, you know, they got a young quarterback. They got a coach that's like 9 years younger than him. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, I saw today on Twitter that McVay was playing quarterback in high school when Tom played the Rams in his first Super Bowl. So, it's an amazing story, right? And it's not only that, but it's the young genius versus the greatest coach, defensive coach of all time. It's McVay versus Belichick and, you know, Tom Brady versus Goff and Aaron Donald and Sue. And, you know, it's going to be a fun Super Bowl. But if you just look at that part of the both sides of the field and what they're doing. And the great thing about the difference, I think we saw yesterday where you asked what the difference is with Tom Brady and and guys like Drew Brees, and Drew Brees is a really good quarterback, but it's just that, right? It's that first and 10 to end the game, and Thomas is there for that play. It's a good play call. I mean, you could argue they should have ran the ball to run the clock out, but it's a good play call. Thomas is open, and Drew just doesn't hit the pass and throws it into the ground in the turf in front of Thomas' feet, whereas Tom Brady, you know, you talk about when he hit Gronk late in the game there on third down versus Eric Berry. He's going to find the matchup, Thomas, and he's going to throw the right ball and give his guy a chance to make the play in the big situations when pressure really is, you know, been in those games and you can feel it just mounting on top of you and you just don't want to make a mistake. And you look at guys like Dee Ford and his face after he's offside. Wow. There, you can just imagine his feeling there, right? But Tom Brady, not only, guys, is the call from the sideline, this is what makes him so good, this call from Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick, not only is the scheme almost perfect, but then you got a guy on the field who in the 20 seconds that he's got to make a play, that he's got to make the decision, that he does it. In someone else's stadium, in Arrowhead Stadium, with all, I mean, you can imagine all that pressure. Even though you know Tom Brady knows where to go with the ball, you still have to make that throw, right? You still have to put it where only Gronk can catch it over what I think we'll all agree is a very, very good safety in Barry covering him one-on-one. He's got decent coverage. Tom puts it, and then Gronk's got to make the play, and Edelman's got to make the play. And it's just the difference with what Brady does that makes him, you know, probably the greatest of all time is he performs. Not only does he execute the play, but he performs in the biggest moments under pressure, and it's fun to watch.
Olin, back to the NFC. What was going through your mind as you watched Todd Gurley on the sidelines? He only had 4 carries for 10 yards. The Rams advance anyway. And afterward, they said the right things. They said it was not a injury situation. It was a flow of the game decision. And that's as surprising as anything that happened on Sunday.
Yeah, and I tweeted out that I thought it was a mistake. But obviously, when you win, it makes every decision correct. I just think a guy with Gurley's talent and ability and the game breaker he is in the pass and the run game, that it's unbelievable to me that he's not on the field. But the first thing I think football wise, Dave, is that he must have been not hitting holes before. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where they think it's there, it's on film, he's not doing it, and they're just gonna put somebody else in there who's gonna do the little things and execute the play the way they ask him to run the play, because for him not to get playing time like that now for 2 weeks in a row in the biggest games of the year, that just means when he was running the ball and he was playing, that he wasn't coming downhill, breaking those arm tackles like he needed to, and getting the yards that were there. Because if you look at that Rams, you know, their divisional round game, before Anderson comes in and runs it, it looks like their running game is stalled again, and then they get chucking the ball to C.J. Anderson, he's just coming downhill and taking what is there from the defense. So maybe they want him to learn from Anderson and how he's doing it and not go for the home run on every play. And just sometimes you got to hit it downhill and get those 4 and 5 yards in the offense, because really that's what makes the Rams offense go, right? Is that those zone plays so they can run their boots and their nakeds off of them. And by that, I mean the quarterback keeps it and he's going to throw the ball and boots out through his right or his left. And they like to make things look exactly the same. They're running a pass and marry those two together. And with C.J. Anderson, they're getting 4 or 5 yards. Now the defense has to play the run. They have to stop, because it doesn't work if you get in 2nd and 9, because then everybody knows that you are going to pass the ball. But if you get in 2nd and 6, 2nd and 5 or 4, now you can fake the run, boot the quarterback out, slip somebody out like Cooks to slip them out and take advantage of the defense trying to play the run.
Any preliminary thought? Anybody jump out at you for the Super Bowl? Do you think it's going to be another – can it live up to the championship game?
Listen, after the day I had yesterday on my prediction, I'm going to take a little while and study this game. But I don't know. I honestly think I'm done betting against New England until somebody beats them, because I think yesterday I let my heart take – I wanted Andy Reid to win his first Super Bowl, and I wanted that pretty bad. But until someone shows me that you can beat New England, and now Bill Belichick and Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels and Dante Scarnecchia and all those evil geniuses in that building, even though the Rams have some of their own. Now you give them 2 weeks to prepare for a team. You give them 2 weeks to study the Rams film, study the Rams offense, study the Rams defense, the best way to take advantage of them. And I just think that If you give a guy 2 weeks, and I think this is their ninth Super Bowl together, I just think it's advantage to them. I think, you know, see, until you show me you can beat them, and with all that time to prepare, and the way Tom Brady played, and their run game now, and the way their defense played, you know, I think you got to go with New England until someone proves you wrong.
We'll see if you can predict things as well as Tony Romo.
Right. Yeah, he's very fun to listen to, man. You can tell he sees the game. And I think what comes out a lot about with Tony Romo, which I didn't know when he played, sometimes when you watch him, is his passion for football. You can tell that he really loves the game. He loves studying it, and he gets excited when he's watching. He gets excited just being in the booth calling the game. So makes him fun. I don't agree with everything he says, but I don't agree with, when the Patriots are running the ball and he's talking about Gronk's blocking. I'd rather him talk about the offensive line blocking.
Of course you would.
But other than that, he's very, very good at what he does, and he's fun to listen to.
Thanks,
all right, Olin. Thank you, buddy.
Good
great catching up.
It, guys.
Cheers. Yep. That is Olin Cruz. He's great.
And Romo had a great day.
Romo was phenomenal. I was saying,
like, I couldn't believe it.
This is what sports is all about right here.
He called the Gronk play down the sideline.
That was the most remarkable one. He saw the matchup.
He's been doing that since he started.
You know,
some
weeks he's not as engaged, I think, as he was yesterday.
He was really engaged.
Rose to the occasion.
Oh, he was fantastic. And then he pointed out the one play. He's like, they haven't used that formation in 8 or 9 years or something.
It was a blitz they ran. Instead of used that since the first half of the first game, and they brought it back, and it was the first time they used it, and it was like, wow.
He rose to the occasion yesterday for the playoffs more than he ever did as a player. I'll give him that.
Oh, man, that's just a gratuitous shot when we're trying to congratulate a guy on a good job. That's what happens around here. All right, we'll get back to your phone calls. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.